Seminaries, including my own, have this as a phrase that they teach their ministers. For a few different reasons, but in recent years we've learned that the first part often gets forgotten, not to be ministered unto. And when we're not careful about that not being ministered unto, there can become a de-evolution within the minister themselves and within the congregation. So not to be ministered to. What this essentially means is that you cannot care for your minister. Sounds a little weird, I know. You can support your minister. You can care about your minister. But you cannot provide direct care to your minister because they are in a professional role with you. It'd be like you trying to provide psychotherapy to your psychotherapist or medical attention to your doctor or any of those kinds of things, right? There's a professional boundary that needs to be kept. You can support your minister, and we'll talk about that in a little bit, but I want to talk about this caring for the minister because this has become somewhat of a renewed revelation in recent years, partially because of what's been happening with the Catholic Church and all of the broken trust and misconduct that has occurred there has forced every denomination to look at it. The Methodists have certainly done the most work, but what we have discovered is there's kind of two sorts of ministers who engage in misconduct. There's kind of the sociopathic, psychopathic, somebody who has something going on with their brain, they're just going to do stuff that, you know, this should not be the profession for them, right? But the majority of them are actually people who are well-intentioned, good-intentioned people who may not make a mistake, except by little bit by little bit. And these are folks who have less than clear professional boundaries with their congregation. And typically are willing to let the congregation feel like it's their responsibility to help care for them. And so there's a fine line between care and support. Supporting your minister is saying, hey, have you been seeing your therapist and going to your accountant and doing all the things that you need to? Caring is, here, let me make sure you have enough food and that you're getting enough sleep and, hey, checking in on you and those kinds of things. Those are two very different things, right? So in the misconduct story, what we find is that ministers who try to be all things to all people, who put the needs of the congregation ahead of their own, who don't focus on their own self-care and getting the support network that they need, tend to start to break down and will lie in order to make sure that the congregation feels like they're okay, will start to accept help where maybe it's not acceptable, and then that slowly over time will break down into justified mistakes. And the minute our brains can justify anything, we end up in a world of trouble, right? In fact, we find that most people who engage in financial misconduct in most any profession have very clear justifications that allow them to still be good people and yet still steal money, right? And we find that's true with ministers as well. That you talk to priests, and many of them had justifications for what they did over time. But it didn't start out that way. It took years and years and years to build up. And the same thing with ministers who've engaged in misconduct. And certainly there are Unitarian Universalist ministers who've engaged in misconduct. What I think is most interesting to me as a newer minister, this is concluding my fourth year of ordained ministry within our denomination. While I was coming through seminary, they were just starting to require that ministers have training in how to be sexually whole beings and how to maintain professional guidelines and professional relationships with congregations. And in that process, our National Association for Ministers started having a conversation about what our guidelines should be around relationships. What I found really interesting and surprising to me at the time was that when there was an effort to include a line that said, we would not have sex with congregants, please forget my foul language, but this is kind of how we talk about amongst the ministers, we will not fuck the flock, so to speak. There was a fight. There was an argument about whether that should be in our guidelines, our professional guidelines. Not all ministers felt like it should. And it was almost entirely along generational lines. A lot of our older ministers who have been in ministry, and I'm not saying all, I don't want to condemn my older colleagues or anything like that. I just want to give you a sense of what the conversation was like. That the folks who have been in ministry 30 or more years were really resistant to the idea. Now, some of this is because some of them had found their spouse for life in congregations that they served. And we do have a love exception clause in the minister's guidelines, which essentially say, if you realize you've fallen in love with someone, set the boundary, leave the church, 6 months later, contact them and see if there's still something there. But it does involve leaving the church first and then contacting the person down the road, not the cart the other way around. But I just want to make it clear that it's these kinds of boundaries and guidelines, not just in Unitarian Universalism, but in all of the religious traditions, it's been an argument about whether it's okay to have certain kinds of relationships with congregants. The minute we muddy those waters, it gets really, really difficult. So caring for your minister, part of the reason why I tell you all of that is to say that part of your job is to offer support to your minister and to maintain the kinds of boundaries that make sure that you are aware and they are aware that this is always a professional relationship, particularly if you've been in a ministry that's been 5 years or more. Because the longer the person's in the ministry, the harder it is to remember, right? So here are some things that you can help the minister make sure of. That they have a support community outside the church, right? Part of the reason I tell you all about this ingress game I play and all the friends I've made in it is so that you know I have created a community outside of this one of support. That I talk about my family, that I talk about those things so that you know that I'm doing what I need to do and to remind me. One of the first things I came in, Mary Johnson asked me, so do you prefer Pastor Sunshine, Reverend Sunshine, or just Sunshine? I said, you know, I prefer Pastor Sunshine because it reminds me, and it's a quick on-ramp for congregations where I'm only serving for 2 years, that this is a professional relationship first and everything else second. It's a good reminder to both of us that it's that. So keeping healthy boundaries. The third is to make sure that we are not burning ourselves out. I do believe that Reverend Kleber would be the first to acknowledge that he got to a point where he was burning himself out, right? The minute your minister starts, you know, trapping raccoons, you might want to look at whether they're doing too much. I just throw that out there, okay? The minute they start, you know, doing things that are way out of their job description, it's time to ask some questions. Are you taking the time you need for yourself, right? All of us are potentially do that. I know I certainly have done it in my time here. I'm sure I will do it again. It's a growing process, right? One of the reasons why we have 2 months off during the year is because of that need for care, right? There are a lot of reasons. I get 4 weeks of vacation, 4 weeks of study leave. And part of that time is spent in spiritual direction, in meditation space, and time away. Because I need to replenish my spirit so I can keep ministering unto you. So you want to make sure, is your minister getting away? Are they doing spiritual practice? Are they involved with a spiritual community other than this one? Where are they getting their replenishment? Again, with that ingress game, right? I go hiking at least once a week. I go walking about 20 minutes to an hour a day, thanks to this game. I get out in the world. And one of the things you actually do pay for your minister to do is navel gaze, essentially. To be able to have times of just reflection, or as one of my colleagues, just looking at the ceiling, thinking, to be in those meditative places. Because that's where the fodder for our sermons comes from. That's where our wisdom when we're supporting you in your own individual situations in the hospital or when you're having a crisis of faith or some struggle with your family. That's where our wisdom comes from, is having those downtimes. Now, I work, generally speaking, 48 hours a week is what I assume, 6 days a week. But I also assume about 5 to 6 hours of that it should be that meditation time, which is really weird to think that I am clocking out 5 to 6 hours of my week as meditation time, but that's also good time management. So in supporting your minister, make sure that you're helping them prevent good misconduct by maintaining healthy boundaries, that you're helping reduce burnout so that they can continue to have the fuel to serve you, particularly if it's in the long run, and that they have a life outside of the church. And then lastly, and this one's easier to do in St. Louis than it is in some places, to make sure that they have a relationship with colleagues, with other Unitarian Universalist ministers and ministers from other faiths. So we have the BUMS is what we're called, the Bi-State Unitarian Universalist Ministers, meet all the way from Carbondale and Columbia. We meet once a month, and we have education time, and we have sharing time, and we have a meal together every month. There is the regional chapter of the Unitarian Universalist Ministers Association that meets twice a year and has a retreat each of those times. And then the minister of this congregation gets an automatic invite to Prairie Group, which is a study group of ministers that meets at Pier Marquette every year and has for nearly 60 years. Okay, and that's actually a very special thing. So making sure your minister is caring for themselves so that they have the food that they need for the second part that we'll talk about in the second portion of the sermon, sed ministrare, to minister unto. And remember, you can't care for your minister, you can care about your minister, and you can support your minister. But if they are receiving their replenishment from you, I mean, we always receive some replenishment just from the job and from caring, don't get me wrong. But the general stuff, if they're getting it from you, there's danger, Will Robinson, danger. So may it be.
Each week we take time to recognize the joys and the sorrows, the celebrations and the struggles in this community. We do this by taking a stone or stones from the bowls as we enter or from the bowl here on the chancel. We allow the stones to bring us into awareness of those things most important in our life through thought or meditation. We then place them in the cleansing waters of this community, which includes a little bit of water collected from our annual water communion. If you have joys, sorrows, celebrations, or struggles you wish to recognize, you are invited to come forward now in the ritual of joy and sorrow.
Please join in singing as you get to know the song. There's a river flowing in my soul. There's a river flowing in my soul. And it's telling me that I'm somebody. There's a river flowing in my soul, in our hearts. There's a river flowing in our hearts. There's a river flowing in our hearts. And it's telling me that I'm somebody. There's a river flowing in our hearts, in our souls. There's a river flowing in our souls. There's a river flowing in our souls. And it's telling me that I'm somebody. There's a river flowing in our souls. There's a river flowing in our souls. There's a river flowing in our souls. As some of you may or may not be aware, last night there was a shooting in a gay nightclub in Orlando, Florida. So far, at least 50 are dead. More than 53 have been injured. And that number is expected to change over the course of the day. We offer our prayers and our blessings. We are reminded of why our commitment to justice being love, what it looks like in public, for all who need our care and support, that these kinds of hate crimes, this kind of terror, may not be seen again. We'll have one moment of silence for all those who were killed, their families, and for the communities that are affected by such a tragedy. Blessed be. We place a stone in the waters for all those who cannot be within us in community today, and for all of those joys and sorrows lying in the silent sanctuaries of our hearts. I invite you to join me now in a time of meditation, prayer, or contemplation according to your own personal spiritual practice. I invite you to take a slow, deep breath in and out. When you breathe in, push out your belly, breathing in and out. And one more time, in and out. I invite you to bring awareness to your body, to this body you call home, to this body that is more than your head, your hands, and your feet. Is everything in between. As you come into awareness of your body, I invite you to take a deep breath again, this time making a sound going from high to low. And as you make the sound, notice how it reverberates from your nose going down into your chest. Breathing in and out. And one more time, in. And out. And paying close attention to how it feels in your body one last time. In. And out. Notice your feet on the floor. How your body feels against the pew or the chair. Feeling of the air and clothes on your skin. I invite you to be here in this moment now. Let the worries of the week melt away. Into this space, we listen to that still small voice within and that great mystery and wisdom beyond our knowing. The wisdom that lies within all of those in this room beyond our own experience and all those beyond these walls. Into this space, we bring compassion and grace, hope and faith, faith in one another, faith in the interdependence of life of which we are a part, faith in the capacity of our action and our doing, for we are the ministers of the world, each one of us, offering our own wisdom, our own compassion, our own grace to a world that needs our love. May we help the people in this world know that they are loved as they are, that they are not alone. May we help ourselves remember that we are loved as we are, and that we are not alone. And may you love yourself as you are, and know you are not alone. In a world of violence, of uncertainty and change, may we be ever present, ever connected, ever hopeful. May we say yes whenever possible. May it be ever so. I invite you to take a slow, deep breath in, pushing your belly up and out. And one more time in and out. One last time in and out. Blessed be and amen. Please join in our meditation hymn, Comfort Me.
Each week, we take some time to pull our financial resources to the work of this church. We are a community who believes in doing, in modeling for the world a way of love and grace that affirms life. We are a community who believes in a personal, free search for meaning and truth. We are a community who believes we are interdependent and connected. Our financial gifts provide a home for such believers and witness to those values in a world that sorely needs these messages. This morning's offering will be gratefully received. May it be lovingly given.
Thank you.
Please join me in our offertory blessing. To the work of the church, which is weaving a tapestry of love we call community, we dedicate ourselves and these our offerings.
I thought, ministers are like bosses. They come, they go. And except for putting the Sunday service together and giving a fairly good sermon, they really don't mean much. Church goes on with without them. And that was my attitude. That's what I believed. And then Pastor Sunshine came. And I remember that first teaching in the worker room. And Pastor Sunshine started out with, "I'm not your friend," and went into the ministerial code of ethics. And I was blown away because it was like the psychology code of ethics. I thought, wow, this is a profession. I was really surprised. I thought, wow, they learned to teach. Maybe they're good for something else. They have a code of ethics besides preaching. That was my attitude, and I had a wall like this that I put up. And then some of us got interviewed, maybe all of us did, I really don't know, by Pastor Sunshine. And somehow I got a paradigm shift that a minister was for something else besides teaching a giving a sermon. That sort of surprised me because that was really a new revelation to me. And I've been going to church most of my life, so you would think I would have figured that out, but I really didn't. I began to see that pastors teach, they give sermons, they bring joy, they handle sorrow, they handle crises of faith, they handle people growing in faith. And suddenly, I saw people, ministers, as people of value in their professions. Now, I value everyone, especially the janitor. Because if you've ever had to work in a dirty building, you know how important they are. But I really had this wall about what ministers do. And I realized that ministers minister and that I needed that. And it was important to me.
Oh, I forgot. I'm supposed to read.
This is from the Unitarian Universalist Ministers Association Standards of Practice. By the corporate act of call, the ministers of the local congregation acknowledge their need for the service of one prepared by education and personal commitment for the work of ministerial leadership. They pledge to labor with the minister in bringing to fruition the promise of the free church and to provide for their sustenance. In the context of both congregational and community-based ministry, the ministerial call signifies creation of a distinctive partnership in which the minister and the congregation alike affirm their intention to share in a religious pilgrimage of our mutual care, joy, forbearance, self-discipline, and a desire to serve the common good.
Sed ministrare, to minister unto. It's not just about preaching on Sunday, it is true. And there are certainly those who think that during the week I do nothing but prepare for the sermon and maybe sit on my thumbs. But in this congregation especially, pastoral care has its own different kind of feel because we have folks who live in Troy and St. Charles. A good 2-hour drive from each other, right? And I have driven to both of those points to meet parishioners for pastoral care needs. I have met with people in coffee shops, at Bread Co. I've met with people here at the church, out on the bench, in the hospital, at the nursing home, in funeral homes, at weddings. I travel a lot for this job, particularly in this congregation. I travel more because you are a commuter congregation, that is, people who are willing to travel to this location, than probably any other church I will serve. So it's important to know that actually part of what you're paying your minister for is drive time. Which, by the way, is also good meditation time, in my opinion. I love driving. It helps me think things through. But it's also to be present to you. And honestly, I'll tell you, when I went into seminary, preaching was the last thing I really wanted to do. I was not feeling confident about preaching at all. It terrified the heck out of me. I can imagine sitting with people and sharing in their lives and hearing about their joys and their sorrows, their pains, and, you know, helping them with spiritual direction and all those things. The idea of getting up on Sunday and doing this 30 times a year? Ugh. No, thank you. Eventually, I started to learn I actually enjoy preaching, and I hope that does come across. But I also enjoy the religious education that we do. I enjoy being with people. I don't necessarily enjoy people's pain. I want to be very clear about that. But it is meaningful to be with people on the journey. Kelly, apparently your Chromecast is lost connection. So the minister does a whole lot of things, not just preaching on Sunday. The code of ethics that I refer to is this, the UUMA Guidelines for the Conduct of Ministry. It is 25 pages long if you don't include the Canadian addendum. A. There is a lot in here, including a covenant between ministers, guidelines for how we will be with each other, guidelines for what's expected of us professionally, guidelines for each individual type. There's a section unique to interim ministry in here and to students, and you get the idea, right? It covers just about everything you can imagine. In the section that we just read from, it follows with 12 bullet points of what the minister's job is. I am not going to read to you all 12 bullet points because we'd be here a while. But I do want to read number 7. In a parish setting, ministers are responsible for assessing the needs and resources of congregations in the many dimensions of community life, such as, in other words, including but not limited to, worship, preaching, administration, pastoral care and counseling, rites of passage, religious education to both adults and children, arts and aesthetics, small group ministry, theological reflection, social witness, concern and action, connections to the local community, outreach and growth, right relationship and community building, as well as district and UUA affairs.
That's number 7.
That's just number 7. It doesn't even get all the other stuff, right? Needless to say, there is no minister out there that is perfectly proficient at every single one of those things. Doesn't exist. Not going to happen. So, for example, some of you have learned from experience, I am not so great at the smaller level, the lower level administrative stuff, right? I tend to forget paperwork. I tend to get flustered about things. I'm really good at the big administrative stuff, understanding the dynamics between people, how to organize things with the board and with committees and groups like that. But when it comes to the day-to-day, you can ask Becky. I tend to forget stuff and I like to call myself a space cadet when it comes to that. And I'm much better than when I started in the ministry. I want to be clear. But my particular growing edge, for sure, is that. Among other things, I'm not perfect by any means, but that's certainly one of them. One of my growing edges and constant learnings is how to balance social justice in an interim time, what that looks like. And this congregation was a huge growing for that around the events in Ferguson, right? How to help a congregation in a time of great trial and conflict in their communities. There's a lot to balance as a minister. But to minister unto is a calling. It is something that when we go into it, we feel drawn to. I knew going into it that that was the list, right? Every minister I know goes into it knowing that that's the list. And we sign up for it anyway. It's worth noting. We sign up for it anyway. Because it is also deeply meaningful. It is life-fulfilling. It is... On the days when I come home and I think, I am so glad I am alive because I got to witness to the great people within the community I serve. But to minister unto, I want to share a story. How many of you like starfish? Yeah? So what happens when the high tide comes in, the starfish get left on the beach and the tide goes out? What happens to the starfish? It dies, right? So one day this gentleman, probably in his 40s, was walking up to the beach and he noticed that there were thousands of starfish on the beach. And down a ways was, you know, an 8-year-old-ish boy who was picking up starfish and throwing them back in the water. And the gentleman walked up and said, "What are you doing? You can't possibly save all of these starfish. How can you matter? How can you make a difference in any of this?" The boy looked at him, picked up a starfish, threw it in the water, and said, "I mattered to that one." Right? I mattered to that one. Oftentimes, ministry is moment to moment, individual to individual. It's piece by piece. Part of the minister's job is to help you throw your starfish, your little bit of responsibility. I am only one, but I am still one. I cannot do everything, but I can do something. And because I cannot do everything does not mean I won't do the something that I can do. That's your ministry, whatever you're called to. Like Albert Schweitzer, if it's to go into Africa and provide medical care, it's that. If it's to go and help animals and make sure they don't get knocked out of trees, it's that. It's whatever you are called to do to make your starfish the happiest starfish it can be, back in the water. Your minister, when they are doing their job well, is not the ministry of the church, is not the only one doing the ministry of the church, is the person who's doing the ministry with you, who is not saying, "Don't throw that starfish back in, you can't save all 2,000. But hey, maybe if the 50 of us in this room start throwing back starfish, we can get most of them, right? No minister can throw one starfish into the water, but all of us together. Now that's another possibility, right? Your ministry. You cannot care for them, but you can care about them. You can support them. And you can recognize that they are imperfect, that they cannot do all of the ministry, but between the whole lot of y'all, you can do it together. One starfish. Feel like I'm throwing a frisbee. Next time you throw a frisbee, think of a starfish. The final thing I will say, next week I'll be preaching on what it means to be visionary. Part of the minister's job is to help you be visionary. Back in October, at the board's request, I gave a presentation on multi-site ministry. And more than a few of you said, "Oh, we'd never do that," and "No, this isn't something we want to talk about." And what happened yesterday? I do believe you had a conversation about the fact that you're going to be engaging in multi-site ministry where you're sharing a minister between two congregations, right? Part of the minister's job is to help you think beyond what you're ready for and let you hear it so that when it comes time, you're ready for it. I'd said a lot of things in these 2 years. And I assume some of it won't take fruition for another 4 years after I'm gone, right? Minister's job is to challenge you, to push you to what's possible, to know that they're not going to get instant gratification, though sometimes I just wish it would just happen, you know? But to help you be visionary about your lives. Next week will be a vision I have for this congregation based on what you've told me. Not an absolute rule, just a way to help you think beyond where you are today. So I hope you encourage your ministers all that come after, just as all who have come before, to challenge you, to push you, to make you uncomfortable, and to support you and care for you, to let them non ministrare, not be ministered unto, said ministrare, but to minister unto you. May it be so. So y'all know I love this particular song, and it's all about doing ministry. So please rise as your spirits and bodies allow. We're going to sing Spirit Says Do. Across a chandelier towards your neighbors. This is your community. Be sure to give a look or a smile, particularly somebody you didn't arrive with today. Maybe even perhaps to someone you don't necessarily like. Because it is true, we don't like everyone in our communities, nor should we. For we are Unitarian Universalists and we believe in diversity. This is your ministry, the people standing before you, the people who are not with us in a community today, the people who will join you in the future as new members, will become your ministry. You are the ministry. Because of those who came before, you are the ministry. And because of our children and youth and those who come after, they will be the ministry because you held this space today and every day. I will leave. Ministers will come and they will go. Your ministry is what will remain. May you support your ministers. May you let them support you. May you know you are enough. May you know you are an amazing pickles-like congregation. May it be so. Our worship is ended. Let our service begin.